enterprising in my surroundings. I'm finding the quietest of states these days. This representation of storm brewing, amazed that the focus remains the vocal focal point of my change.
Hello and welcome to the Rambling Runner Podcast. I'm your host, Matt Chittum, and this is the podcast for all the dedicated amateur runners out there who are working hard to get better while balancing running with the rest of their lives. Talking about working hard to get better, I am so excited to have Matt Fox here on the podcast. You may know Matt from his work with Sweat Elite. This guy is doing such good work filming some of the best runners in the country as they prepare for a variety of different events, some for the Olympics and now for the, I guess, the full panoply of marathon options that people have. And he has followed some of the best runners around. They have just been a sensation on YouTube. And I couldn't wait to get Matt here on the show to talk about everything that's going into these videos and what he's learned as a runner. Because Matt is someone who ran a 148 half marathon, 148 half miles, that's 800 meters, and has done incredibly well as a middle distance runner. Basically, a phenomenal athlete in his own right. So, what was it like watching other phenomenal athletes do their thing and do it at different distances than he's competed at? With that said, he is a marathoner. So, he's going to be running Chicago in just a week from now. And he has a 2:24 marathon PR. He's hoping to better that. So, what did he learn from all this stuff that he's been doing? And for those people who are listening, who are entrepreneurs in their own right, we also talk about that. This was just such a fun and exciting episode. Now, before we get into it, let's talk about Richmond. That's right. We have the VCU Richmond Marathon. We have the Carfax Half Marathon and the Allianz 8K. I love these events, right? Richmond does it right. They always have. And I am so excited to be going down there in just a month and a half. This is going to be great. Richmond provides phenomenal course support, great fall scenery, and awesome finisher swag. In fact, the VCU Health Richmond Marathon is a top 25 Boston qualifier event. So if you're a marathon, maybe it's not happening, or maybe you're not sure about it, you want to sign up for a new one. You probably, if you've had one on the calendar for this fall and it's not quite going to fit in, or maybe it's canceled, check out Richmond. I'm telling you, this thing is great. The course is mostly flat with some rolling hills and travels through sink sections of Richmond. It's great for first timers and features a downhill finish right along the waterfront. Your safety is a big concern here, and they are doing everything they can to make sure that it's as safe as possible. So be part of America's friendliest marathon by registering at richmondmarathon.org. And if you use code RAMBLINGRUNNER, you'll save $10 at checkout through November 13th. Again, that's richmondmarathon.org. Use code RAMBLINGRUNNER for a $10 discount. I will see you there. Now, let's get into it with Matt Fox. Matt Fox, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me, Matt. I really appreciate you having me on tonight.
This is really exciting. So I was just telling you offline, and it's so true. I like to think of myself as someone who has one of the best jobs out there. It's one of like the hallmarks of my being, right? Like, I got to be a college basketball coach. I loved it. And then after 10 years in the wilderness of college fundraising, here I am. I got another great, great job. With that said, I think you might have me beat. Like, this is, you have a really, really awesome job as well. So before we go any further, I'm sure everyone who's listening is very familiar with your work. They might not be familiar with you necessarily. So enlighten the people who don't know, what do you do? And what are the things that you've put together that maybe a lot of people who are listening right now are probably pretty well aware of?
I guess what people would probably be most familiar with if they're listening is the videos of professional athletes training over the last 4 to 5 months from the Sweat Elite YouTube channel. So that's been me creating those videos. The creation of Sweat Elite actually dates back to almost exactly 5 years ago now, and we can talk about the history a little bit later. But yeah, I arrived back in the US in April this year after a very interesting sort of 18 months prior to that with COVID.
And we're going to talk about that too.
Yeah. I'll give you the really short version of it now, the 30-second version. It's that I moved to the US, more specifically Boulder, in January 2020. And I was just about to get into the videography work. And in March, when COVID struck, that obviously put a halt to it. And I went home to Australia because I'm an asthmatic. And at the beginning of COVID, there was a real worry around asthmatic. So, cut a long story short, I got stuck in Australia for over a year with the government restrictions. I tried to leave. I got rejected every time. And in the end, I actually left illegally, if you want to call it that, because I was just fed
up. That's a long swim, Eddie.
I broke some rules, put it that way. We can talk about that. But yeah, so I'm back now, and I guess people that would be familiar with my work would likely be have been watching some of the videos that I've been producing with some of America's best distance runners.
It really is exciting, and you do such great work. And I've had like a small window into that world from a podcasting perspective with Road to the Trials. So we did two seasons of Road to the Trials, which the whole idea was to get an insider's look into training and racing some of America's best distance runners. As you know, I have the intro now down. I think that was the intro word for word. Sometimes you get these things at the higher levels. They just kind of run themselves. But it's one thing to do it in a podcast form, which is all kind of reactive, like what has happened, tell me about it. And that can be captivating. And I love the audio format. What you're doing, I feel like it reaches a very different level. And I feel like it's so much more instructive. So can you just walk us back to the initial formations of Sweat Elite and why, basically how it germinated inside of you and that this is something that you wanted to put together?
So it actually dates back to about six and a half years ago when me and some friends wanted to create the Strava for running, because at the time in 2014, Strava was only really very big in cycling. And it was terrible timing because as we launched, Strava launched into running. They had a lot more
Strava
money.
Strava became the Strava for running?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, this is 2014. So back in 2014, right. There was very few runners on Strava. Almost, I didn't know any. And yeah, so we got crushed out very quickly. That's really that's really cutting a 18-month period into 30 seconds. And then I thought what I learned from that project was how much interest there was in these professional athletes training, because I was the data guy at the mobile app. And I was looking at so many people creating accounts, not even logging, but just like following Nick Simmons and Zane Robinson and some of the professionals that we had on. And I thought, well, how can I create something that's not as difficult to keep afloat, like a mobile application or a social media application? And it's just showcasing this information. So at first, I just started publishing like articles about elite running training. A lot of them were just taken straight from the mobile app's data. So it was like Nick Simmons logged all of this information leading into the US trials, for example. That was one article. And then we just started.
Can I interrupt?
Yeah,
I think there is a market now for that. Can we just have like someone who just literally like goes through Strava files and is like, this week in Strava? Like, I feel like that person would do very well.
Well, you know, from this podcast, we might see it pop up somewhere because it's not a bad idea.
I interrupted you, but I had to throw that out there because I'm like, holy cow, like, talking about, like, putting together content, like, it literally writes itself. It's great.
Yeah, well, that's kind of what we were doing in a way, but we were pulling the data from our own mobile app that we made.
Right, right.
And then I went, okay, well, how can we get more data? So I started interviewing athletes. And for the first 3 years, it was basically just a blog. It was basically just a bunch of articles. Very quickly, I realized I wanted to try and make it a business. So we put a subscription behind it so people could read a few articles per month for free, and then they had to upgrade to read them all. In the third year, we got into podcasts. And by the way, it was not all smooth sailing. I mean, in the first couple of years, there was multiple times that I was not sure if it was going to, you know, be a viable business. I was earning, you know, very little money in the beginning. For the first couple of years, it was really unclear if it was going to have a long-term potential. I think it was the third year that we sort of had enough subscribers for me to understand, right, this actually has legs. Third year, we really put more focus into podcasts while still doing the articles. And in the fourth year, we decided to launch, the end of the third year, we decided to launch into video. And that's when COVID struck, so it was delayed. We've really taken the video, you know, very seriously this year. And I've been really quite amazed at how well it's been received. And yeah, it's really exciting. There's a lot of really interesting things coming too, many of which I probably shouldn't mention because they're not confirmed yet. But it's been a blast the last 5 months here. I think we've produced 36 or 37 videos now. So we've been sort of covering Sarah Hall, Jim Walmsley, Craig Engels, Paul Chelimo, a lot of these athletes. Yeah, I think some of the better ones were probably leading into the Olympics as people were preparing for them. So some of the Paul Chelimo ones, I think, were my favorite. And some of them have had upwards of 500,000 viewers, which is pretty amazing. I didn't know there was that many people.
Which is amazing, right? It literally is amazing. Can you think about the cities and towns that had 500,000 people, and you'd be like, that whole town watched my show, right? Obviously, that's not true, but you could like the equivalent of that situation. Like, it's like, it's wild. Like, it's funny how sometimes people start these sort of creative ventures, and early on they get despondent of like the lack of success, and you're like, listen, 200 people listen to your podcast, man. Like, can you imagine if 200 people showed up at your house?
Yeah.
You'd be like, who are all these people? Where did it come from? Like, it's funny. You get this thing started. Like, you never know how it's going to hit. And you never know what the long tail will be. But it's good for you for constantly iterating and iterating and iterating and finding new creative ventures. When you had that sabbatical back in Australia before you really got back into it, were you able to use that time to help you create what this has turned out to be? Like, can you look back on that as with any kind of silver lining component in terms of what you were able to create since then?
You know, there is a small silver lining. I mean, I spent a lot of time when I was stuck in Australia studying videography. Because
I love the stuck in Australia part, because there's so many people who study abroad in America and they go to Australia. They're like, I want to stay here. Like, sign me up for being stuck in Australia.
I mean, that can definitely come across the wrong way. I mean, I was urgently trying to get back to the US because that's where my work was, right? So like,
of course,
I was just frustrated that the government wouldn't let me do that. But let's not go down that rabbit hole. but yeah, I spent a lot of time in 2020 watching some of my favorite YouTube channels and really like taking notes. And more specifically, Lionel Sanders was a big inspiration for me, triathlete. And there's plenty others as well. And I took a number of courses because prior to that, I had very little experience in videography at all. I watched a lot of flow track stuff. I thought some of it I liked, some of it I wasn't so keen on. And so I guess to answer your question, there was a bit of a silver lining there and having a bit of time to prepare for these video projects. And, you know, it's they probably have been produced at a higher quality than they would have the previous year, simply because I probably spent an extra couple of hundred hours either doing courses or studying other videos that I thought were really good and taking notes and making sure that the microphone on my camera was exactly the right one that I needed to be able to, you know, ride with and be able to tolerate the wind and all that sort of stuff. So, yeah, I mean, those improvements probably would have come over time, but they probably were there in the beginning of this cycle this year. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. It's like, 'cause you get that, this kind of a chicken and egg thing. That might not be the best comparison, but there's that moment where, like, you want to just, the key is to start, right? Like, and starting messy is fine, right? You don't want to wait till everything is perfect to start. Yet, there can be the moment of like, hey, if I can't start, maybe I can utilize this without it being some sort of like research, basically procrastination, you know, masquerading as research type feel to it.
Yeah, exactly. No, you're dead right. I mean, I've been interested in entrepreneurship and startups for a long time. And honestly, one of the key things is to avoid perfection in the beginning. Like, it really is. It's to just get it out there. And I look back at some of the earlier videos of even this year, like Parker Stinson's, and I watch it and I think, oh, there's a lot I would have done better, you know? So that's a good sign, right? Like, it's good that I look back at those and think, oh, I think that we've gotten better along the way. And yeah, I think you said it perfectly when you said like, just start, get going. And that's the one thing that I've really learned. I mean, I went through a bunch of failed businesses before this one. So, you know, I was definitely getting used to just putting stuff out there and then reiterating and improving over time. And yeah, I mean, I think the one thing that I see people struggle with if you want to talk specifically about startups is just procrastinating on getting started.
No, for sure. For sure. Yeah. It's easy to postpone. It's easy to stick with an idea.
It's also easy to be worried about what people will think and judge you online. Like, that's a big fear for a lot of people, and everyone has that fear, but I think it's just important just to try and get past that.
Now, what did you have to ingratiate yourself or earn the trust of the people that you wanted to to follow around?
It's funny because in the beginning I wouldn't say I had a hard time locking in projects, but it was definitely slow. And it wasn't really until, so I was quite fortunate to be friends with a physiotherapist in Australia. He's very well known. You may know him because he's got a podcast, Brad Beer.
Okay.
He has the Physical Performance Show podcast. He's a high level physiotherapist. That's quite good friends with Sarah and Ryan Hall. And he linked me up with videoing them. I think it was the third and fourth video. And I really noticed that after Sarah Hall had been on, and also Parker Stinson and a couple of those early ones, it was a lot easier for people to understand, okay, like, this is what you're doing, as opposed to me pitching it before they've seen that or they've seen Sarah Hall reshare it. Because, you know, if someone that you don't know is pitching you something and you know, you've only got stuff to lose, I guess, in that way, like, you're always just probably just going to ignore it. But once those first five came out, it became a lot easier for athletes to to get on board, to the point where some athletes have approached me. And yeah, that's a great scenario to be in, I guess, when you don't have to do that work to really prove who you are. Luckily, a lot of the athletes now are like, yeah, like I know who you are. I've seen some of the videos. So yeah, it's great to be in that position. And I really hope that I can continue to produce the quality of content that we have been.
That's a great point. And it's something that is not lost on me. I actually lived that life in the beginning of this show. Like I start putting out shows for dedicated amateur runners. And like what I would do is like I'd put out, say you came on the show, right? So this is just like Matt Fox before Spud Elite. People didn't know who he was. Matt Fox comes on the show, dedicated amateur runner. You know, 15 people listen to the show, right? So it's one of the first ones that's ever come out for Rambling Runner. What I used to do is I would like go into like, if they shared it, I would go into like the comments of their Instagram or wherever they happen to share it. If like a friend was like, hey, man, I like that show. And be like, all right, well, do you want to come on the show? So like, I didn't have to introduce myself. And they're like, got to the point, like the same sort of thing. Like, hey, you start reaching out to people. If you can reference back another person who is familiar with your work or has been on the show, again, I'm saying this to the folks who are listening to this, who are, hey, I have a creative venture in mind, or I'm starting one soon, or I just started one and I'm not sure how to proceed. And I can really value what you're saying here because it's so true. It's like, it's an easy way to build a win. Once you get that one win in the bank, it can go a long way to getting more people to really buy into it.
100%. It's really a networking game, I think, at the end of the day. And I think, you know, sometimes it might take quite a while for you to get to that point that we're sort of talking about that we haven't really labeled, that point where it just becomes a lot easier. I was lucky in this time, I think, that it came around quite quickly. And I think that's probably purely because Sarah Hall was on early. She shared the videos a lot. And I was just so thankful for that because I think a lot of the athletes follow her were like, that was the initial, oh, okay, like that's what that is. And maybe some of them watched it. So yeah, it's exactly right. And it's interesting to hear that you sort of went through that too. I think many successful podcasts, I'm sure, were the same.
And it's interesting because you are coming into, you're starting this business at a time where like all of these professional runners have this either spoken or peer pressure of, I need to put out content. However, like I need to put out content, relatable content, but content that like I'm not necessarily like inclined to create. And it's interesting that all of a sudden, here comes Matt Fox. It's like, all you need to do is just keep running. Like, I'll do the rest. And like, you're not putting on your platform, but you can share it. And it's interesting. I can imagine a lot of these folks, you know, taking you up on this offer because it's like, finally, I can put out some of this content or put out content around myself that's authentic. It's not like me doing some weird picture or writing like a super general post on social media that doesn't mean anything. Again, I'm not casting aspersions on anybody, but we've all, you know, people who've done this before know what I'm talking about. And all of a sudden, here goes Matt Fox, who's a pro, who's like, hey, all I have to do is follow you on a bike. You don't have to do anything. And they get this unbelievable content out of it.
Yeah, I mean, everything that you've said is sort of paraphrasing to saying, like, I want to make it so that the athlete doesn't have to do anything, like no effort whatsoever. And I, when I contact the athletes or the coaches, I say that. I say, you don't have to do anything different to what you normally do. Like, you show up at training at the time you normally do. You don't have to say anything else. I'll ask a couple of questions. And I think over time, I've gotten, you know, better at understanding when the right times are to ask questions. When an athlete's really struggling in a workout, you're not going to want to ask them a question. You're probably going to want to ask that earlier on when they're maybe not struggling. I was an athlete. I wasn't a professional. I was sort of semi-professional in the middle distances about 10 years ago. And I remember training thinking to myself, I got pitched a couple of times by some local, you know, photographers and stuff to come to train. And I didn't really want them to be there. I just thought like, I just thought to myself, you know, I have to then like change what I'm doing and think about that. And I did do it a couple of times, but I think having been through that myself as an athlete on the other end, I just thought like, it's so important for them to be able to do this so that they don't have to do anything at all different to what they normally do. And, you know, I think that's really worked.
And now that you've spent time not only in this space, but also on the app side, following people's training while they share it with other people, how have you seen the evolution of professional runners sharing the details of their workouts in a way that, you know, maybe wasn't as widespread, you know, 5, 10, 15 years ago?
Oh, that's changed. That's changed dramatically over the last, I would even say, 5 years. You know, I think back to when I was... I finished competing semi-professionally in the Middle Distance in 2013. And back then, it was a mystery as to what, you know, so I was a 148 800 runner, which is sort of like a couple of seconds off qualifying for the Olympics. And I had no idea really what athletes better than me were doing. Like there was a couple of blogs online, not many. Nick Simmons put out a lot of stuff, but he was about it. But now it's really changed to the point where like, it's almost like a trend started around 2015, 2016, whereby athletes that were putting out more information and like, which would engage more with fans with sharing their training simply became more popular and more interesting to fans. Like it's really simple, right? Like that's always going to happen. And I think that's got up to a point where like some athletes 5 years ago that were like, would refuse to share training and thought it was secretive are now faced with a weird situation whereby they're like, well, I'm falling behind in terms of like popularity because all of these athletes around me are sharing their training on Strava now. And I just think to myself, like 6 years ago, I never would have imagined all of these athletes being on Strava, but like most of America's best athletes are now. They're not all, but I wouldn't be surprised if in 2 years they pretty much all are. So yeah, it's really changed. I'll never forget, you know, 2013 when I was just thinking like, there's no resource really for me here to pull that shows like what people doing 144 do in 800 meters.
Right.
So
I mean, you could like read like the older books and like what was Jim Ryan's workout schedule? Like you get these things so much later, right? You get these things. You never get them like in the moment, right? You had these like, all right, these retrospective looks at training logs, and you're like, all right, well, like even if I say all of this writing is correct, which you could probably argue in certain cases, it might be fudging the truth a little bit. It's like, all right, well, I want to know how this person's training, not just 10 years ago, but like right now. Like, what did they do this morning? I can see all the allure for the athlete, especially if it's like they're not doing anything funny like Kira D'Amato, like, you know, making like funny comments on Strava, or like if they're just like everything looks like morning run on the title. Like, it's just like their GPS is uploading. They don't pay it any mind. They're never in it. Even in those situations, I can see the value in it. I do wonder if you've had experience with how coaches have evolved on this matter, because I've personally, I'm not going to name names here, but I've seen certain coaches who are very protective. They almost view it as like intellectual property, right? Like these workouts, which is funny because like everyone does the same workouts, but it's like this intellectual property of theirs, these workout plans that they're giving to their athletes. And I can imagine them maybe not being as receptive to some of these ideas.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Again, I think that trend is changing over time. I do, like you, I'm not going to name names, but there certainly are still some coaches that do not want to share that stuff. And yeah, each their own. You know, they've got every right to do that. But I think that, like we've sort of already discussed, I think in my eyes anyway, I could be seeing this wrong, but I feel like those people are probably going to be there are exceptions to the rule. I feel like someone like Galen Rupp can get away with being a little bit of an enigma because he's so good. But, you know, those athletes that are not quite at that level, I just feel like the more you're sharing and engaging with fans, like the better off you're going to be in every regard. Like you're going to have more sponsorship opportunities. You're going to have more fans. You're going to have more, you know, more opportunities in general. And athletes that are not doing that and keeping it to themselves, I don't know. I just think that I can notice them already being a little bit maybe left behind in terms of the opportunities that come their way, probably more specifically for sponsorships. But yeah, I'm not sure if I'm right there, but yeah, that's how I see it.
No, I think you're right, because like, you think about other sports, like runners just aren't in people's faces as often. Like even if you ran every weekend, say you competed every weekend for the length of a baseball season, right? It's still like, again, say take you, right? We're talking not even 2 minutes worth of action. So like, where is the engagement? Like where it's so quick. So you have to, if you really want to maximize, you have to detail the practice because that's where all the action's happening, as opposed to like, say a professional athlete where it's like, yeah, like we're practicing, but like a baseball team is like, we're not like practicing. We're like, we're warming up because we play 162 games. Like we're not, these practices are not like killer here. Whereas like the, you know, Parker Simpson's out there running 24 miles to get ready for Boston. It's a completely different, that's where the action is. And it's interesting to see folks who are like, you know, who are willing and able, and their support system is willing and able to allow them to make that happen. Now, as you've gone through this, and again, you were a high level athlete, 148 is no joke. And you know, we had, you know, plenty of 800 meter men's 800 meter runners who were around 148 who were in the mix for the, you know, getting ready for the trials and things like that. With that said, even with you competing at a high level and against high level competition, what are some of the things that have surprised you over the last 5 or 6 months with some of the training you've seen? By surprising, I guess we can talk about some of like maybe the surprising, like, wow, I thought this would be harder, but like surprising, like, wow, I didn't realize that this was the level some of these people were training at compared to maybe my own personal experiences.
Yeah. Well, the one that comes to mind, I've already mentioned it, it's Paul Chelimo. And I just like filming 5 of his workouts, especially the ones before the Olympics. Honestly, he did some workouts that I just thought were not possible. Like I just thought, how is this guy running this comfortably at 4:30 mile pace? It looks like he's just cruising. And yeah, I mean, that just shocked me. I mean, I've looked back at that video a couple of times and just thought to myself, like, yeah, I just really didn't think, you know, people could look that smooth in training running that pace. And in general, like to answer your question probably more specifically, it's so fascinating being around his training group because, you know, you think when you're an amateur or you're a sub-elite that you have to become, I think a lot of people anyway, that they almost have to take it more seriously and they have to turn up and be more serious in some way. I think that's a natural inclination for a lot of people, but it's amazing how like relaxed and almost like how much of a, they don't take it as a joke, obviously the training sessions, but they just laugh, they joke around, they give each other a bit of a hard time. I mean, I'm sure people probably know what I'm talking about if they've seen some of the videos, cause I've recorded a lot of those conversations that they have, but they're just like really, really relaxed at training. They're not really too worried about it. They don't really think that much about the workout until they're standing on the line and they're ready to do it. And that's just the attitude that they have. You know, that's not the same with all of the groups for sure. You know, there definitely are some different attitudes. Like when I filmed NAZ Elite last week for their last long tempo before Boston, I mean, that was very different. There were some really serious, nervous athletes there before that tempo run to the point where I didn't feel comfortable asking them anything. You know, it was really, really serious. So, you know, it's a real spectrum there, but yeah, I mean, it's been really fascinating. It's been really, really, really good fun. And yeah, I'm sure I'll learn more along the way. And if we catch up on another podcast in 6 or 12 months, I hopefully have some more stories. Yeah.
No, absolutely. Yeah, because I wonder how, you know, when you see the differentiation, and so, you know, you have like, again, Paul Chelimo getting ready for the Olympics, you know, doing these workouts, you know, doing Mario said, like, you're looking at like, oh my God, I can't believe this. And then Nazalit, you know, it's easy to kind of to notice the differences, especially when it comes to body language and communication and things like that. Are there certain elements of these high level training and workouts that I guess are uniform throughout, that you say, okay, these are like the common best practices that I'm seeing, maybe not in 100% of them, but like in 95% of these workouts, these are the things that are pretty common along the way?
The one main thing that comes to mind when you ask that question is recovery times between intervals. So I always thought when I was training back in, you know, 10 years ago for middle distance, I was always really, really strict on the recoveries. My coach was, but I just became even more strict to the point where if it was 10 400s, you know, I would take exactly 90 seconds rest if that was what was on the schedule or 2 minutes rest. And I would be to the second pretty much every time. And I would not be comfortable if I was going 10 seconds over that. I think that's not what the workout should be. And what's most interesting about it is like, I would say 100%, I think, from memory anyway, that's not the case with the Iliad. Like oftentimes it's jog 200 or it's like around 90 seconds. It can be 70, it can be 110, but oftentimes the recovery is kind of loose. And that's one thing that's the first thing that came to mind when you asked that question, because I think a lot of sub-elite or amateur runners would feel strange about that. They'd think if the coach has six by a mile, and the recovery is supposed to be 2 minutes, I have to take exactly 2 minutes or as close as possible. And oftentimes it's just not like that. And in Chelimo's sessions, you know, in one workout, he was a little bit tired towards the end because he hit some of the intervals a little bit faster than what he should have. And one of the recovery periods extended like over a minute, and it was no problem to them. It was just take an extra minute because you need it. And yeah, that's been an eye opener. I didn't really expect how relaxed that would be.
And let's dive into the reasons behind that. I mean, when you talk to these coaches or when you evaluate it, I'm sure I can presuppose some of this, but do they give some sort of evaluation as to why it doesn't have to be a strict number and why it's more of a feeling?
Not really. No. I mean, I haven't really heard any specific reason. I think just a lot of the time it's more about like how the athletes feel. And they'll give them a rough idea. Like I said, oftentimes it's jog 200. That's a very regular recovery. Sometimes it's around 90 seconds or around 2 minutes. But oftentimes it's just like, is the athlete feeling like they're ready to go again in the next one? And I think there's obviously that finding that fine line between you don't want to be fully recovered and but you also feel like you don't want to start the next interval when your heart rate's just way too high or your lactic levels are just too high. So, you know, the athlete probably has to take many, many practices and years to learn when that exact time is to go. But no, to answer your question, there hasn't really been a specific, you know, thing that I've heard or anything like that. It's just more this what I've noticed.
And what's it been like noticing the interplay between coach and athlete? Again, I don't expect you to paint with too broad a brush here because you've worked with so many. But just I'd love to know, with a lot of these athletes, I can imagine them doing workouts that they've done so many times at paces that they are so familiar with. And yet there are coaches there helping them through this stuff. And I guess some of these athletes could probably on some level like coach just as well as their coach is doing. Maybe not coach themselves as well, but maybe coach another athlete in a similar way. So what is the interplay at these levels between the coach and athlete? And what does the coach provide these athletes?
Again, it's quite different among all the groups. Some athletes, some coaches are very, very much more about them making the decisions. So if an athlete's feeling tired, some coaches might be like, let's finish this workout off regardless. A lot of the times it's a Nazalite, for example, again, that's fresh in my mind from last week. You know, halfway, it was supposed to be a 16-mile tempo, which is like what they build up to do 3 weeks before the marathon, so 3 weeks before Boston in this case. And they decided about, I think it was about 8 miles through, that two of the three guys were going to stop at 14 miles because they just weren't quite feeling 100%. And that decision was not made by the coach. It was made by the athletes, and they basically told Ben Rosario that they're going to stop at 14. So, you know, that was not really Ben's decision. And Ben supported that. He thought that's the right move. So, again, it really sort of varies. Chelimo's group, he was very much calling the shots as well. One workout, he cut a few reps short because he hit the intervals too fast, and Coach Scott Simmons was totally fine with that. Yeah, oftentimes it is the coach sort of just being the advisor and setting the plan and being there as a, you know, as an overlooker to make sure everything's under control and that they're obviously there to help them in any way. But I think more often than not, the athlete's really calling the shots in terms of changing the workout during, adding recovery, reducing recovery, which is rare, but sometimes it might happen. But I think the most common trend there is that the athlete will often make that call halfway through if anything's to change.
Well, let's talk about your running, because here you are watching some of the best runners in the world doing some special things. You've been an unbelievable runner. I mean, 148 and 800. You're like selling yourself short. That's really, really good. But here you are. You're not a middle distance runner anymore, man. So talk about where you are as a runner and what you're about to embark on.
Yeah, I mean, I'm nothing close to these guys that we're talking about, but I am running Chicago Marathon in how many days now? 10. And I'd like to run under 220. That's the goal. My best is 224. And I look back at the training I did before that, which was that was in March 2020 when I ran 224. And yeah, I'm definitely ahead of where I was then. So I think sub 220 is possible. The weather forecast in Chicago is potentially going to be a little nasty, a little bit warm. And maybe
I saw maybe 72, 73 degrees.
Yeah. And I'm not good in the heat. I'm much more like when I ran 224, the training block before that was not great. I had a few issues with some different things. But it was freezing cold that day in Japan. It was like 36 or 37, and that suited me well. So I'm a little worried about the weather, but again, yeah, nothing I can do. I'm just sort of doing it, you know, when I can. Training most days. I'm not very high mileage. It's about 65 to 70 miles. We'll see how we go. I mean, I'm actually really hoping Sarah Hall goes for the American record 2:19:36, because if she does, I'm going to try and sit with her paces and hang on as long as I can. So, yeah,
that is one of the benefits to Chicago, right? I remember, you know, when Bridget Koski, which you run 2:14, and then we had like the group where like Ben Bruce, Stephanie, and like that whole contingent of the men and the women together. It was such an interesting connection point. between some of the runners. And it was, and you don't get to see that a lot, especially at the World Marathon Majors. It's definitely a very, very Chicago feel.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I really hope that happens. I mean, I don't think she's announced that she's going to go for the record, but I mean, she went for it at the Marathon Project in December. So, right. You know, you can only, and she's improved every race, I think. At least, you know, she's had a couple of, in the middle, she's had some races that haven't been as good as she would have liked. But, you know, her progression is trending towards that record. So let's hope. I mean, I'd love to be able to sit on that pack and maybe I'll wave, you know, maybe the camera will be on us too and I can give it a wave. So yeah, it'll be fun. I don't know. That's exactly my goal, that record, 2:19:36, you know, to break 2:20 would be what I want to do. So give it my best shot. Yeah. I did my last hard workout yesterday. So it's pretty much all the training's done. So.
Oh, that's exciting. So where would you start in relation to the elite women?
So there's the elite start line. I don't know how many people that is. I think it's about 50. And then there's a section which I've never seen before, but it's American development. So it's like sub-elite Americans only. To get into that, you need to run 2:35 or better as a male. The female, I think it's, I don't remember, 2:55 maybe. I could be wrong with that. I don't know how many people are in that section.
So the same speed as the top women elite, basically.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and then I'm in Coral A, which is the next one. And I think I'm only assuming, you know, there's going to be 50 elites and then probably maybe 50 to 100 of this development group, and then I'll hopefully be there. So, I hope to not be too far away from that that start line where the women will start, because I'd ideally want to jump on the back of that pack and, we'll see.
Well, you've already run 2:24, so you obviously know what you're doing. You're a sub-elite yourself in the marathon. So did you pick up anything in the last 6 months or so while you've been doing all of this filming and also obviously training at a pretty high level to try to shoot for a massive PR here in the marathon? And also the additional question on top of the question, were you like kind of bending your adventures to like, all right, maybe I should follow more marathoners as I'm preparing for the marathon? Maybe pick up some tips and tricks along the way?
Yeah. So have I learned anything in the last 5 months? Probably not all that much. I mean, I spent a lot of time researching and writing, me and my colleagues, writing, you know, articles about marathon training sort of 2018, 2019, 2020. Spent a lot of time in Kenya, talking to Renato Canova, you know, Eliud Kipchoge's group. We spent some time with them prior to him really becoming a massive superstar. That was 2017. So I sort of like, I really had a good understanding of what these guys were doing in training, sort of dating back to 3 to 4 years ago. So I haven't really done a hell of a lot new this time around. The only thing I really have done this time around is actually reduce my mileage a little bit, because I had about a 2-year period up until early this year where I had a lot of small injuries, just like tendonitis and shin splints and stuff. And I just concluded to think like maybe I should just dial the mileage down a little bit and keep the quality there, which I have. And I think that's worked really well. To answer your second question, have I been gearing more towards marathons? Maybe. But at the same time, once the Olympics were over and the season was over in August, there's not really much more track stuff on. So a lot of the track athletes, right. We've had a few people on YouTube comment saying like, can you do more 1500 guys? And I haven't responded to it because I don't want to be like one of those people responding rudely, but people should probably think that those guys are on a break now. So, you know, you've got to think about where the season is. And over the last month or two, everything's been leading into these major marathons. So, you know, that's been where we've been doing most
of it. Can I get a Rebecca Mara easy run on there? I say that as I'm a big Rebecca Mara fan. I'm actually publishing an episode with her as soon as I get off the phone with you right now.
Oh, okay.
But, cool. You know, it is the season. It is marathon season. And it's not just marathon season. It is maybe the biggest marathon season of all time.
Yeah, yeah.
They're all right next to each other.
They're all coming up in the next few months, next like 6 weeks, I guess. So, I mean, many of them are coming up in the next 2 weeks, but then obviously New York is a little bit further away. But, most of the videos lately have been marathon specific, and that's been for the reason that the track athletes are mostly resting. So, you know, like you said, we can film someone's easy run, but I'm not sure how interesting that would be. But then after New York, there'll be probably a period that will be a little quiet because most people are just doing base training. But, you know, I'm already in discussions with some pretty good groups around here in Boulder and Flagstaff to do some of that base training, you know, work and put it online. And I'm really looking forward to that. And then I guess once sort of March, April comes around, then it's all gearing in towards the season again. So the track stuff will be more, will probably be more popular than the marathon stuff.
And where you live, Could you easily, especially in the winter months when things start to shift, and obviously there are people could be getting ready for CIM or Houston and things like that, so it's not as if it's a completely barren landscape. But in those months, could you see yourself maybe even moving over towards some of the ultra marathoners in your region, who obviously it might be hard to follow them in the mountains, but a lot of them are also running on dirt roads and the kind of buffed out trails where you can maybe follow them along while they do some of their stuff?
Yeah, that's definitely an idea. I mean, one of the videos I shot a few months ago was with Jim Walmsley the week before Western States Endurance Run, and we've already been sort of briefly discussing another one sometime soon, so that may be towards the end of the year. I don't think he's firmed up his racing yet, so once that happens, we will. Also, one other thing that I guess we haven't mentioned yet is I have decided to stick with keep doing exactly what we're doing, but I'm actually working more closely with a couple of athletes based here in Boulder and doing a weekly video with them. So I'm happy to say, like, one's Gwen Jorgensen. She's got her own YouTube channel. She's had it for 4 years now, and I've cut a long story short. I'm now going to be producing her videos from now on. It's a weekly one, and so that's also gonna be the case whereby there's gonna be some more specific individual athletes that I'll be working with. I won't mention the other ones because they're actually not 100% confirmed yet, but they should be over the next couple of days.
So are you the reason that she moved to Boulder? I followed along the "Where am I going to move" series.
No, that was not the reason. No, it was just lucky that I lived here too, I guess, so it worked out. But it's been great to work with her. I've done a couple of videos. I published her first. The first one that I produced for her channel this morning. There's another one coming up on Saturday, and then we'll try and make them weekly. And it's a good setup whereby I can still continue to do exactly what I'm doing and that won't stop. But then there's also a few athletes that I work more closely with that like the style of the videos. So,
oh, it's really exciting. You do such good work and such high quality. I can see why you are in such high demand. When I think about running on YouTube, there are certain people that come to mind. It's what you're doing. Ethan Newberry has done such good work. Billy Yang has done such good work over time. Obviously, you guys do very different things. Can you see yourself at some point taking on a longer project, maybe not just longer terms of like your duration with the athlete, but more of like a documentary? You know, we're talking 35, 45, 60 minutes of a complete deep dive?
Yeah, for sure. I'm definitely interested in doing that. What that is and who that is with has not been determined. But I've seen a couple of comments in YouTube about people suggesting that, and I'm definitely interested in it. But it's more about when the opportunity comes up. I think it'd be a brilliant idea to have a really top level athlete in the States prepare for either the Olympics or the World Champs or like a major marathon to try and run maybe an American record or go close to it, and to really cover almost every workout of theirs leading in. I think that would be something that would be really cool to work on. I really hope that opportunity comes up at some point soon, and we'll see what happens. But that's definitely interesting to me for sure.
I mean, because Nazalit did something a year and a half ago. Obviously, it comes out later.
Yes,
because it's just from a production standpoint, it's not like you're going to be able to turn that around quickly, and you want to make sure you're storytelling, not just chronicling at that point. Those things are. I know it takes a lot of time, money, and effort, but it's so fun to watch these longer, unbelievable deep dives.
Yeah, for sure. I've watched the Nazalit one, and it was really, really well done. I wish there was more of it. So hopefully, I can maybe be one of those people to push it forward. And I think at the end of the day, it a lot of it boils down to how is it funded. That's a tricky thing for some people because, unfortunately, on the internet, and it seems like even more specifically in running, but that might just be because I'm so got a microscope on it. A lot of people don't really want to pay for content. That's just the reality of it. And I feel like it sometimes makes me wonder when people, they don't want to pay for content and they complain about seeing ads. It's like, how do you expect this thing to come to life then? It's tricky. We were lucky in this regard that we built that 3.5 years worth of subscribers that are paying monthly or yearly. And that's actually funding a lot of this videography stuff, even though it's not directly for the subscribers. And luckily, I think over the last 4 months, some people have subscribed just purely because they want to support the production of the videography. So it's like $50 a year, and it's just their way of saying thank you for what you're doing. At least we've had a few messages of people saying that they've subscribed, but they don't, they're just there to support. So yeah, it boils down to, I think the reason why there's not more of it is probably a financial factor.
Right. Yeah. And it's a huge time, you know, you have to have the right people. Like, all right, it needs to be someone who understands running, who's going to follow these people around. You know, it is an involved process. That is for sure. And, you know, it's like Instagram ads. Those pre-roll ads don't pay either. In case people were wondering, there's not a lot of money in those. And also, like, the other way to go, but it provides this huge conflict of interest, is it'd be like, you know, the brand itself, right? They're like, okay, hey, if we get a documentary, like we're Brooks, right? And we're like, hey, we want to get Matt Fox to follow along, you know, athlete X, right? I'm not gonna say a specific athlete, but look at the athlete X. It's like, okay, well, like, what if you're not happy with the production? Or maybe there's stuff that happens in this that, like, is too sensitive, or, like, you know, it opens up a can of worms where, like, the financial possibilities are enticing, but the creative control all of a sudden can be corrupted.
Yeah, exactly right. You couldn't have said any better there. It's tricky. Yeah, I mean, it really takes trust. It really takes time. And, I mean, I hope that people that might approach me to do something like that long term have seen enough videos to understand the style and what the scope is. And, you know, I'm always happy to learn and adapt and do something a little bit different if possible. But yeah, like we've already said, I really hope that something pops up like that. And I wish that there was more of it out there. I mean, one of the first thing that Coach Mike Smith said to me when I turned up to the NAU workout last week when I filmed their squad was like, he said, you know, I love the content that you're doing. And he's like, there really should be more of it out there. And I'm like, yeah, there should be. Why isn't there? And there's no answer for that. So I think it boils down to maybe a fun.
Someone's got to be first, though, right? Yeah. Someone's got to be first.
Yeah, well, I mean, I feel like Flowtrack used to do it really well, and I'm not exactly sure what happened there. It seems like they put a lot behind big paywalls, you know, which I can understand, especially if they've got investors in the background that are pressuring them to perform and, you know, whatever their financial goals may be. I understand that whole aspect of business. And but yeah, I mean, I guess they haven't been more as frequent lately, and they've become a lot of them have become very sponsored and very heavily edited. And I just thought, you know, I kind of liked what they were doing 12 years ago. So let's like kind of try and pick that back up and make it a little bit more interesting if possible. So that's been the part of the inspiration.
There you go. All right. So if people want to view the stuff that we're talking about, where's the best place for them to go?
Yeah, so YouTube, typing into the search Sweat Elite training sessions, and you'll see, yeah, the 36 or 37. I don't remember exactly what we're up to. You'll see them all there in the library. Yeah, I can confirm that typing in Sweat Elite training sessions, it does come up straight away. The search functionality is pretty clean there in YouTube. So yeah, that's the best way to find it. And yeah, it dates back to early May. Is the first one, and it's basically been between 2 or 3 a week since then.
And you mentioned the subscribers. Where should they go if they're interested in that sort of thing?
Well, on the videos, there's a link straight to that. So that's probably the easiest way to find it. But if you go to sweatelite.co, which is our website, unfortunately, the domain sweatelite.com was taken a while ago, and I can't seem to buy it off them. But yeah, if you go to there, and there's a subscribe button in the top right corner. So by subscribing, people access all of the articles without any sort of, you know, wall coming up. If you don't subscribe, you can read some articles and then it will pop up and say, you know, it costs $4 per month to read them all. You know, it's just purely for us to just keep the lights on and to keep paying the writers. But yeah, and that also obviously, like I said before, that funds a lot of the videography work as well. So yeah, really appreciate the subscribers. You know, we wouldn't be doing what what we're doing without them. And yeah, I think it's a good win-win for everyone, because it's not a very expensive subscription. It's $48 per year if you pay annually. And yeah, there's over 400 articles in there to read. And yeah, that's I would be surprised if people came out of the Sweat Elite website without really understanding much about marathon training or middle distance training, because there's articles and everything in there. So
I love it. You guys are doing such great work.
I appreciate that.
You know, make sure you guys spell it correctly, because if you type in Sweet Elite, you're just going to get me pounding candy corn on YouTube. So
That's not us.
You know what I mean? It's a totally different genre. I'm trying to branch out. No, Matt, thank you so much for coming on the show. I really appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me. I really like what you're doing too. And yeah, thanks so much for having me on.
Matt, thank you so much for coming on the show. This conversation was so much fun. Big shout out to Richmond, the VCU Health Richmond Marathon, the Carfax, Half Marathon, and the Allianz Partners 8K. Wonderful events down in Richmond. I'm going to be running the half. I can't not wait. Go over to richmondmarathon.org and sign up today and save $10 by using code RAMBLINGRUNNER at checkout. Also, make sure you're checking out what Matt's doing over on Sweat Elite, putting out great videos constantly, and they really are doing it right. Thank you so much for listening. Speaking of YouTube, if you're over there, go check out my new YouTube channel. I'm doing shoe reviews that I am so excited about. I've done 3 reviews already, got a couple more coming this week. If you listen to this podcast, you know how much I love shoes. I just absolutely love talking about them, diagnosing them, learning more about them, and I'm going to be doing that over there on the YouTube channel. I am so excited about it. So thank you so much for listening, and happy running. This has been a production of Rambling Runner Podcast. This podcast is produced by David Margetti of In Post Media. Thank you to Meta P for the music. His song, Righteous Path, featuring Rex Mayhem and Chip Fu, is produced by Symphonic Bang.
Yeah. Enterprising in my surroundings, I'm finding the quietest estates these days. Just representation of storm brewing, amazed that the focus remains the vocal focal point of my change. I'm trying to show this industry.